everyone. There's only so much time in the day. That's why we edited this Vermont Edition podcast for brevity. I know you'll thank us.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. It's difficult for everyone involved to come up with a good rhythm for kids after a divorce or separation. Sometimes parents stay in close proximity to one another and kids move relatively freely over the course of a week from one parent's house to the other. Sometimes kids visit one parent only on weekends or only occasionally. Sometimes they have to travel long distances to make it work. And while most divorced parents work hard to do what's best for their kids, they don't always agree on what that is or how to go about it. All of that can be exacerbated during a time of stress. And when you add in stay-home orders and no school or childcare, well, this is all new territory. And I want to point out, for some divorced or separated families, this may well be a clarifying moment of familial togetherness. So I don't mean to suggest that it's all bad. But we've been getting questions from parents wondering if their custody agreements should still be followed and how. And from some who say one parent is taking social distancing very seriously, but the other one isn't, and wondering how to address the discrepancy. We're joined now by Judge Brian Grierson. He's Chief Superior Court Judge for the state of Vermont. His job as Chief Judge is administrative, overseeing and assigning judicial officers and judges in Vermont's trial courts, including the Superior Court for Civil, Criminal, Environmental, Family, and Probate Divisions. And he also still hears cases. Judge Grierson, it's a pleasure to have you with us on the show today.
Thank you for inviting me, Jane.
Let's talk about some of the legal questions first, because we've gotten some questions from families who are wondering if they have to and should abide by their legal custody agreements during this stay home, stay safe order. What can you tell us about legally what families should know?
Well, keep in mind that I am not giving legal advice. So if anyone has questions about their particular order or how it relates particularly under these current circumstances, they need to reach out and get independent legal advice. So with that qualifier, I will tell you that as a general rule, for instance, the governor's stay-home order, which has prompted an awful lot of phone calls to the courts, doesn't change the existing parent-child contact orders that may be in effect. There may be individual situations that one party or the other may feel creates an emergency. And if that's the case, the court, you may or may not be aware, is hearing a limited number of cases based on an administrative order issued by the Supreme Court approximately a week ago, limiting hearings to only certain emergency proceedings, which include emergency orders relating to children, either in the juvenile context or in domestic matters relating to suspension of parent-child contact. So if an individual feels there's an emergency that meets the criteria of that administrative order, they can apply to the courts. But generally speaking, certainly the governor's order in and of itself doesn't change the parent-child contact order that's in existence now.
Yeah, that may help Kurt in Burlington and Joanna, who are wondering, you know, are the custody agreements still in place during this stay-home order? VT Mom says, what's the expectation with transporting children between households during the stay-at-home order? So we got that word from you, Judge Grierson, that generally speaking, all custody agreements are still in place. But VT Mom says, also, can I refuse to allow my child to go to their other parent's house due to the possibility of exposure? What advice? And again, you know, you are not commenting on individual cases. You're not giving legal advice, but a lot of people may be worried about exposure and how to handle this in a two-household family.
Well, just someone's fear that something may occur at the other parent's house, generally speaking, isn't enough to warrant that person taking action. I'm not going to let the child go there. If they believe, and I'll repeat what I said before, if they believe that there are particular circumstances that they have evidence of that puts a child at a greater risk today than yesterday, then they have a right to petition the court for an emergency request to perhaps modify the parent-child contact. But again, the orders that are in effect remain in effect until they are modified.
Let's go to Nicholas, who's calling in from St. Albans. Nicholas, hi. What's your situation?
Yeah, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you, Judge Grierson, for being here today. And actually, Judge Grierson answered the question perfectly. You know, I'd just like to remind, I guess, parents briefly that the idea here is to work together and create a situation of stabilization for the children. And let's keep in mind that essential personnel are still going out there doing their jobs, taking proper precautions, wearing personal protective equipment, and going home to their families. And the idea here is to create a stable situation for the children. And I really think working together is the key. And it's just not the time for personal differences. And that's the sense that I'm getting just based on my personal situation and then from callers and questions.
Nicholas, do you have advice for others on how to not just put your kids first, because I think it's important for everybody to feel safe and secure and stable, but how to have those conversations when there are new stressors?
I have a lot of advice, and I have attempted to communicate in my own personal situation in various modalities, and there are some things that can't be changed. And Judge Grierson will, I'm sure, have a world of knowledge to elaborate on that. You just can't change another person, or you can't convince another person. It comes down to the adult in the room, and if one person isn't coming at that situation from complete righteousness, it's going to come out in the children one way or another, typically. And
yeah.
Any social service employee will show you that. Statistically, though, if you guys look around the world in the age cohort of 0 to 20, the results are very optimistic for children, and the data supports that there is very low data of children being affected by COVID-19, and any statistician or somebody who's up to date could tell you that.
Well, Nicholas, I appreciate hearing your perspective and what you're thinking about and wondering about. I want to read a note that we got from Samantha, who says, who lives in Randolph, and says, my ex-husband and I have been divorced for 12 years and have always had joint custody. The kids are now teenagers, our daughter in high school and our son a freshman in college. Our arrangement has been Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday night at my house, Saturday, Sunday at his, and we always did one kid nights on Monday and Tuesday, and my daughter has stuck to this schedule since she was 3 years old. My son is home as his college is closed. Both kids are quarantining with their dad right now. He lives in the woods in Randolph Center. My ex-husband was possibly exposed at work, and the kids were with him. Now it is just easier to make sure they quarantine. I have a compromised immune system, and although I miss my children, I understand the need to quarantine right now. So Samantha, you know, dealing with this in her own life right now. Dan wrote in and said, wondering how people with divorced families are supposed to handle social distancing. Who gets the kids if one parent gets so sick they can't take care of the kids? Dan says, I know I would take my daughter and isolate ourselves. I don't have underlying health problems that I'm aware of and consider myself to be in decent shape. But what about people who aren't? I think a lot of people must be wondering the same thing. And Judge Grierson, you know, I wonder, there are custody agreements and arrangements, and you know, for many families, it's somewhat fluid, but for some, it is definitely not. And it's taken a lot of work to get to the point where you have a very strict arrangement. If people are getting sick, you know, that's all going to change. Is there flexibility in the court system? And would you advocate for flexibility with families to try to figure this out?
Well, I think both your last two callers, Nicholas and the woman from the Randolph area, these are different times. These are different circumstances, whether it's parents, children, DCF, foster parents, the courts, attorneys. This is all new. And if there's ever a time for parents to work together, this is the time, because the circumstances may be such that there should be a change in the parent-child contact. We always encourage parties, parents, to try to work out their differences before they come to court. They are in the best position to know what is best for their children. And the circumstances may change, and particularly, they may change overnight. The situation with the children or parent may be different tomorrow than it is today. I don't think the answer is to rush off to court, but rather to try to talk with the parent and try to come up with some kind of temporary arrangement that is works for both people and, most importantly, the children. If they can't do it, then that's what the courts are there for. And we are receiving a lot of calls and a lot of, people concerned about this. And hopefully they will try to work out their differences themselves. If they can't and it is truly an emergency, then that's what the courts are there for, particularly at this point in time. We have reduced staffs. We have reduced judge time in the courts to address this, and so we are operating, but we're operating on emergencies only. And some of these situations may in fact be emergencies that we have to address. But it's going to be a individual case by case determination. The trial judges, as a group, many of them are meeting as you and I are talking to discuss this very issue. I would be part of that conversation if I wasn't with you, Jane. But this there's no easy answers for anyone. And it's always a balancing of risks whenever you're talking about parent-child contact. And the COVID-19 has introduced a new unknown risk. And so it makes it these kinds of decisions even more difficult than they are anyway.
Well, I really appreciate you being with us, when you have this important meeting that you're not at. So thank you. Thank you again for doing this. You said you're getting a lot of phone calls to the court, and some of them are about this kind of thing. What else are people asking in this realm of, family and divorce and questions about children?
Well, sometimes keep in mind that one of the reasons we're getting a lot of calls is that, in particular, in domestic situations, a lot of folks are unrepresented, meaning they don't have attorneys to ask for advice. They are self-represented, and so they're calling the courts. And the courts, much like myself, can't give out legal advice except to tell them the procedure that they have to follow. But the kinds of questions are anywhere from, sometimes there's been a change in a place where the parents were meeting to exchange the children. Those businesses, some of them may have closed. It wasn't uncommon to meet, for instance, in a local restaurant, meet inside and exchange the children there and then leave. Maybe that restaurant is now closed. That's where the parents have to talk about, where else can we meet so that, and keeping that social distancing. There are other situations where perhaps someone has had supervised contact at a supervised visitation center, and maybe that center is now closed. Those are the even more difficult cases, and those are the kinds of situations that I expect the court would end up addressing, because that closure of that visitation center wouldn't just be a modification so much as a complete suspension of contact unless a suitable supervisor can be found. And that generally doesn't happen outside of a court context. So those kinds of cases, the court could be seeing those are the kinds of questions that were being asked. DCF, I'm sure, is struggling with this because with the children they have in custody, many of them are in foster settings. And I know that there is an approach they're using with success in many of their cases to go from personal contact to remote contact, either by Skype or some other mechanism that allows the parents to maintain contact, but in a different way than they've used to. So Those are the kinds of issues we're seeing. If you can't do it in person because of the risk, is there another way of making maintaining that contact, maintaining that attachment?
So joining us now is Christine Johnson, Family Services Deputy Commissioner for Vermont's Department for Children and Families. Christine, thanks for talking with us today.
You bet, Jane. Thanks for having me.
You just heard Judge Grierson talking about, you know, in some cases where visitation has some very strict parameters, maybe for a situation where biological parents have some visitation rights for a child who's under DCF custody. And this situation with public spaces has changed all that. How are you dealing with that?
That's a great question. So we have approximately 1,200 kids in our custody. And so we do family visitation with many of those families. And what we did last week is we, together with our community partners, called all of our families and asked them if they would be willing to have a virtual visitation. So by, you know, calling and being on Skype and, you know, doing the teleconferencing approach, really, really being mindful of what we're all being asked to do, especially with this new stay home, stay safe order. It becomes really important that we think very creatively about how we approach this. And, you know, this is difficult because we know that our families and our parents, they want to see their kids. And when our youth and kids are in foster care, this is really a time of stress anyway. And adding the COVID virus on top of this has really added, I think, a level of stress that we're really working hard to accommodate. Again, as Judge Grierson was saying, wherever possible, doing it virtually so that we can reduce the risk to our kids, to our families, our foster parents, and our staff. And I just want to say, you know, I think our staff has just done an amazing job, and I'm very proud of the response that we've had to do this kind of outreach and to be able to support families in this really unprecedented time for all of us.
Yeah, I mean, that must be so difficult for everybody, and certainly that inability or suspension of being able to touch someone you love is a big deal.
Yes, it absolutely is. And I think, you know, my kind of mantra to myself is we will not be in this situation forever. And so, you know, if doing a visit virtually can reduce the exposure, because there are many people that are involved, our foster parents, the, you know, the parents themselves, the children themselves, and our staff. And so when you think about the many ways that that can cause exposure, potential exposure, and we know that would be our primary, you know, method of having our visitation for our families and for our kids. And, it's just not, you know, it's just not something that, is a realistic, I think, reality at the moment. And so we just, like I said, we've had to get creative and think about how we do this differently.
Christine, what advice do you have for families who are in situations where there are legal proceedings about, you know, what they should know? And we can ask Judge Grierson about this too. But in terms of, like, if they're in adoption proceedings or if they're families where the biological parents are trying to get custody back of their children and they're sort of in a process of that, what do they need to know about what's happening right now?
Well, I think what they need to know is that our staff are still working. We're all working remotely, so they can certainly be in communication with our family services workers. They can be in communication with their guardian ad litems and their attorneys. And so I think maintaining that communication is really an important thing right now. And so, you know, wherever possible, you know, staying connected on those things and, you know, just because that, you know, we're all working remotely, but we're still here and we're here to support our staff are here to support our families and everybody through this process. So don't lose sight of that. We also have stood up a website related to COVID on our Family Services Division website, and it gives guidance for our community partners and our foster parents and parents who are involved with DCF. In addition to our residential treatment providers, we also are offering support to youth that were formerly in foster care. You know, many of them are navigating this difficult time from maybe being in college and no longer having housing. And so we have stood up a way for them to respond to us as well and for us to support them through that. So I think communication is going to absolutely be key.
You know, we were hearing and talking about in the initial question of people who are considered essential personnel, that their children are allowed to receive emergency child care. And on the list are foster parents. And so children in foster care can access child care. But we got a note from Susanna who says, I'm 67 and on Social Security. I adopted a baby 9 years ago from DCF. Will there be any help for us? It's been very expensive since school has been closed. So it sounds like for Susanna, her child is not in DCF custody, but she's wondering if there's any support. Christine, can you tell her anything?
I sure can. And so we are absolutely looking at that. We know that this COVID crisis, if you will, is causing extreme difficulty for a lot of families. And so we are looking into that and thinking about, you know, what are the supports that we can offer? Will they be financial? We are certainly looking into that.
That's Christine Johnson, Family Services Deputy Commissioner for Vermont's Department for Children and Families. Christine, thanks for talking with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And we're still talking with Judge Brian Grierson and hearing from some of you about what's happening with custody arrangements and how you're navigating moving children from one household to another when we're not supposed to be moving around so much, and how that's all working in divorced and separated families. Bernie's on the line from St. Albans. Hi, Bernie. What's your situation?
How are you today?
Good, thanks. Go right ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I just have a question for the Your Honor about custody arrangements that are have been in place where one parent doesn't want to cooperate with the other parent when it comes to visitation.
All right. So, Bernie, thanks for the call. Now, Judge Grierson, you know, you mentioned a little earlier that the court is only really available to do court proceedings under emergencies. But what does one parent do if there's a disagreement that they can't seem to get past?
You know, Jane, that's an ongoing issue separate and apart from the impact of the COVID-19.
Sure.
This obviously may aggravate that situation, and I can't give this young man legal advice, but again, if there is an existing court order that is not being followed, then that order should be followed. And if it rises to the level, I mean, there are different levels of not obeying a court order. If it's rising to the level of an emergency situation, then, as I said earlier, he can apply to the court describing what this factual basis is for his request for an emergency. It's real important when they file for such a request that they outline what the emergency is. If this is a situation, without knowing anything about his, that it's an order that's been out there for, I don't know, let's say a couple of years, and maybe these two folks still don't get along, and maybe the parent-child contact hasn't been exercised regularly. I don't know that the COVID-19 is going to make that all of a sudden an emergency, but it may.
Mm.
And so it's that's why I'm saying every case is fact specific. If somebody had regular contact, regular schedule that both parties had been following, and now all of a sudden one of them says no because of COVID-19 and the governor's order, that's not the way it should work. On the other hand, if you haven't been exercising contact regularly for whatever reason, the COVID-19 in and of itself may not be the factor that warrants an emergency change now.
We have a question about what would warrant an emergency. And again, I'm going to preface it by saying, as you have, Judge Grierson, that you're not giving out individual advice or legal advice. But Nancy says, I have sole legal custody of our 11-year-old daughter. My ex and I share physical custody 50-50, week on, week off. In our household, we are in complete isolation, but in his home, there isn't. My daughter's father is a food market owner, and he's working daily and interacting with the public. There's no flexibility or potential for movement on his end. Would the court consider this an emergency basis for a motion to protect our daughter? Now, again, you can't speak to their case, but, you know, are questions about isolation and health enough to perhaps warrant an emergency?
That one's cutting too close, Jane. That's so fact-specific.
Mm-hmm.
Any response I gave wouldn't be fair to either party.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the type of request that if one parent feels that that the circumstances rise to the level of an emergency, that the child is at risk and they can document it, then they should be applying to the court. The court may or may not view it as an emergency. That's why I was saying it's important that they, when they file something, that they put in what facts they believe make this an emergency. That's what's critical at this time with reduced court operations. So that's the best answer I can give.
If there is an emergency, how quickly is the court able to act right now?
Well, there's staff there and there are judges in the buildings. And so most of these come in a written form, and the judge in the building, assuming they're not on the bench, will review it and they will make a decision whether they will decide that it's emergency, it needs a hearing or not. So I would say that they, at least initially, it gets turned around pretty quickly as to whether or not they will hold a hearing. That's the important thing right now is, are we going to schedule these matters for hearing? It may in fact be a reason to modify a case, but if it's not on an emergency basis, it's not going to get heard right away. So,
and anything else parents and families should know who are moving through legal processes right now, maybe going through divorce proceedings?
I guess I'll repeat what I said earlier. Now more than ever, you've got to try to resolve your differences yourself. Whether it's the COVID-19 or otherwise, when two parents come into court and present their case, we're only getting a snapshot of what that situation is. And that's why I encourage folks, try to resolve your differences. If not, file it in court and we'll make the decision. But you're better off if you're making the decision.
Well, that's Judge Brian Grierson, Chief Superior Court Judge for the state of Vermont. Judge Grierson, thank you very much for talking with us today, and I really appreciate you skipping your meeting for us.
Thanks. I'm sure they'll fill me in on what I need to know.
I certainly hope so. Thank you very much. This has been Hour 2 of Vermont Edition. I want to mention in particular that our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals, and thanks to everybody here making it work. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.